I really love Christmas. You just can't beat the season. Austin woke up this morning talking about Emmanuel. He says, I love that song, Emmanuel. And it's finally Christmas, and we're playing it today. And then, you know, it's those songs that I was thinking, if I was ever going to write a famous song, I'd want to be a Christmas one, because they never grow old, and they come back every year, you know. Guys wrote songs hundreds of years ago, and we're still singing them every December, you know. Born that man no more may die. I love that line in Hark the Herald Angels. And of course, the other good thing is, more than any other time of the year, is the decorations, right? Not only the houses, but especially outside the houses. I love driving around and seeing them. Austin this week, although he said, you know, there, one thing I really like about living where we do now is we're not by Interlaken. He had one of those moments right after. He hadn't been driving for very long, and he called me one night and he said, Dad, I can't get home. And it's like, because, you know, there are those inside lanes where you can go, but people block the streets because they think you're going to cheat. And so here he is, he's a timid, he hadn't been driving along, he's timid, and he can't even get home. He just had to turn around and drive to a parking lot somewhere and call for help. And so I came in, and we had to do the kind of the shuttle thing, because I'm not afraid to just sit there and stare at people until they let me in or whatnot. You know, I can get out of the car and say, look. Anyway, so, you know, and we love driving around, though. I love the scenes of the Bible. I also love the others. Sometimes, you know, I take pictures when people have things confused, like a penguin at the manger, things like that. We just kind of go, ah. Yeah, Santa at the manger. But anyway, the one that most interests me is that's never really there. And the topic for today is, what are you afraid of? And because it really strikes me that as Jesus came, there's a whole bunch of don't be afraid. And I mean, you get it, right? Because there's like Gabriel appearing left and right, and then these angels out of nowhere. And over again, especially Luke, because he's the one that tells these early nativity stories, he says they kept saying, you still alive? Right? You didn't, don't die on me? Don't be afraid. It's going to be all right. And so what I want to talk about is really how Luke, he goes through, especially Luke, goes through a lot of times over and over again where Jesus, where angels, where God had to say, don't be afraid. And it's a beautiful message to me of why Jesus came. And so this isn't the first one in the Bible, but I want to start here because we're talking about displays at Christmas. And it says, there were shepherds living out in the fields nearby, keeping watch over their flocks at night. And an angel of the Lord appeared to them, and the glory of the Lord shone around them, and they were terrified. But the angel said, do not be afraid. I bring you good news that will cause great joy for all the people. Today in the town of David, a Savior has been born to you. He is the Messiah, the Lord. And I've always kind of wanted to see that terror depicted. And Cindy tells me it just wouldn't be Christmassy. And I'm not, if I were an artist, because what you do see, I don't know if you can, well, it's a little too small. But it seems like even the drawings that I see of artists, they have this picture, and sometimes the shepherds are like this one, where they're just kind of, ooh, that is something. It's like they're watching a fireworks display, right? Isn't Joe, isn't that the neatest thing you've ever seen? It doesn't, I'm looking for the terror. Or the other one, I don't know if you can see this, but the guy, it's almost like, hey, man, that is so bright. You know, it's like someone turned on the light in the middle of the night. But when I read this story, I picture these guys, and, you know, they've been maybe trying to catch some Z's, and one of them hops up, and he runs right into a tree, right? Because I picture these guys stumbling over and looking over their shoulder, and I never see these guys with their mouths wide open, right? To me, it's kind of like the story when the angel rolls the stone away from the tomb. You know, the women are coming, and he wants to make sure that they can see that Jesus is long gone. You know, they don't have the stone to let Jesus out. It's like, I know there's a seal here. It's really heavy. I'll just move this. And it says that when the angel did that, that the guards were so terrified, they became like dead men. Okay? That's the kind of thing I picture when the angel shows up, because this is just, it's otherworldly. And I don't know if I'm going to live to see tomorrow, right? I hope I told my wife I love her. I hope I wasn't fighting with her the last time I saw her, because this may be it. And that's what I picture with this. And these guys instead say, don't be afraid. Right? They don't come, it's a thing that really, that it means something to them. It's not just a thing that says we come in peace, you know, we just want to let our sheep eat a little grass, and then we'll be out of your way. You know, it's not, we're not going to coexist like Columbus, you know. It's we've got some great news for you. And what's happening right now is what you've studied about your entire lives, that the Anointed One is finally here, and he's going to be Lord. This is going to change your life. This is fantastic news. And of course, they jump up, and they've got to run in, and they've got to see it. Probably after they change their clothes, right? The next one, I want to back up. Before that, Zacchaeus, he's very old, and he's a priest, and they choose by lots who actually goes into that holy, holy place to burn the incense, all right? And he's been his whole life, and the lot finally falls. The lot finally falls to him. It says an angel of the Lord appeared to him. So he's in this holy of holies, right? And you hardly even want to be in there anyway, all right? He comes in there, and all of a sudden, there's someone else, and there ain't supposed to be anybody else in there, right? The angel of the Lord appeared to him, standing at the right side of the altar of incense. He's like, excuse me, that's where I'm trying to go, right? And when Zechariah saw him, he was startled and gripped with fear. But the angel said, do not be afraid, Zechariah. Your prayer's been heard. Your wife Elizabeth, she's old too, right, will bear you a son, and you will call him John. He will bring back many of the people of Israel to the Lord their God, and he will go on before the Lord in the spirit and power of Elijah to turn the hearts of the parents to their children and the disobedience to the wisdom of the righteous, and to make ready a people prepared for the Lord. Wow. It's not just a need to know, maybe. I don't know, but to hear all of that, right? And everybody outside is thinking, maybe we better start pulling on the rope to drag him out, because maybe he's had a heart attack in there, right? But we can't go in, and he comes out and he can't speak. But the beautiful message, don't be afraid. Something wonderful is happening. It's through you. The same kind of thing with Mary, isn't it? Gabriel, the same angel that went to see Zechariah, comes to see Mary, tells her this great news, and it says she was greatly troubled at his words and wondered what kind of greeting this might be. But the angel said to her, do not be afraid, Mary. You have found favor with God. You will conceive and give birth to a son, and you are to call him Jesus. And he will be great and will be called the Son of the Most High. I don't know, at this point, he's not doing anything to help me not be afraid, right? Your son will be called the Son of the Most High. The Lord God will give him the throne of his father David, and he will reign over Jacob's descendants forever. His kingdom will never end. But don't be afraid. Luke doesn't leave this theme. I'm going to skip over one passage, and we're going to come back to it. But in chapter 8, there's three different stories all about fear. And the first one has to do with the storm. You remember they're out on the ocean, and they're trying to get from one side of the sea to the other side, and this storm comes up, and it's rocking, and these men who are fishermen think this storm is so bad that they're going to die. So, these aren't little novices like me, right? These are people who really know what they're doing. In chapter 8, it says the disciples went to wake Jesus, saying, Master, Master, we're going to drown. And he got up and he rebuked the wind and the raging waters, and the storm subsided and all was calm. Where is your faith? He asked his disciples. And in fear and amazement, they asked one another, who is this? He commands even the winds and the water, and they obey him. And this one also isn't quite like I've always pictured it in my mind, right? At New York this last year, we did the boat, and it was a lot of fun. And of course, we didn't want to terrify small children, but we did make it, it was like there was darkness and lightning, and people were squirting water mist on them and all this, and the kids were laughing, but you were kind of getting the picture of I'm in a boat, and Jesus calms it. But somehow in my mind, when I think of this story a lot of times, I'm thinking, I'm really afraid because there's this storm and I'm going to drown, and Jesus stops it, and I'm excited, right? Woohoo! Jesus calmed the storm! High five! And it's not, you know, instead, these guys are just like, what are we doing in the boat with this guy? Right? He can talk to wind and water. And Jesus says, where is your faith? I'm not really exactly sure why he said that. I mean, because we know that even if we're Christians, we could die. But I, part of me wonders if he thought, did you not think I could handle this? Right? I raise dead people. I make lame people walk. I make blind people see. But he's wondering why they're so afraid. The next one is the story of this demoniac. And you remember they cross over this area that's not even really Jewish, right? They're just kind of getting away from some crowds, and they find this guy that is dragging chains that he's busted off of other things, but maybe they're still attached, and he's naked, and he's just wild. He's just crazy. And Jesus has this conversation with him and casts these demons out, and there's some people that see it. And they go back and they get the whole town to come see what's happened. And so in Luke 8, again, the three stories in Luke 8. When those tending the pigs saw what had happened, they ran off and reported this in the town and countryside, and the people went out to see what had happened. And when they came to Jesus, they found the man from whom the demons had gone out, sitting at Jesus' feet, dressed and in his right mind. No surprise, and they were afraid. Those who had seen it told the people how the demon-possessed man had been cured, and then all the people of the region of the Gerasenes asked Jesus to leave them because they were overcome with fear. So he got into the boat and left. I'm tempted to read this story and think, what idiots. Right? But sometimes I think if I really think about what happened, maybe I start wondering, why didn't everybody say this? This great power, do I want to be near it? What does that mean to me? And I can understand their fear. This next story in Luke 8 is about this woman who had been bleeding for 12 years. Some of the other accounts besides Luke tell us that she had spent every penny she had on doctors, and the only thing that she had gotten for it was worse. Right? And so this woman is trying to figure out, I can't imagine being sick for 12 years, right? She's trying to figure out what she can do, but she's got so many strikes against her already. One, she's a woman. She hears that this Jesus, this holy man, is coming through town. But, I mean, you look at the stories of the Bible, and it's very rare that a woman goes to see Jesus. There's that Phoenician woman, right? There's a Samaritan woman who doesn't really go to Jesus. She's surprised when he talks to her because she's a Samaritan. This isn't, are you nuts? I mean, but you read stories about blind men calling out to Jesus. You read story about leprous men calling out to Jesus, but you don't hear stories about women doing that, right? So she's a woman, and as I think about it, I'm just wondering, I mean, did she even have a man to go for her, right? Because intermixed with her story, if you remember it, is the story of this synagogue ruler, and he's come because his little daughter is at the point of death. His name is Jairus, and Jairus does not send his wife to talk to Jesus, right? He goes because I'm somebody. My wife is not. And anyway, this woman is thinking, I don't know, she's thinking, I've got to get to him, but I'm unclean. I'm not supposed to be out in public. Anybody I touch is unclean until evening. This is the most holy man I've ever heard of, and I want to touch him. And so I don't know what, you know, she's got to pray that people don't say, aren't you the woman? I mean, all the doctors know her, right? Or that she starts bleeding. Someone says, hey, shouldn't you be going home? All this is happening, and the woman What's amazing to me is she touches the hem of his garment. She's like crawling. I'm not even sure that she's strong enough to get through the crowd. I don't know how anemic she is, but she can't get through the crowd. And finally, she touches Jesus, and the Bible tells us she feels it. She knows it, that she's been healed. But Jesus said, "Someone touched me. I know the power's gone out from him." And she's thinking, "Oh no. This wasn't part of it. I just wanted to touch him, let them finish walking on top of me, and go home." One of the other accounts says that the disciples said, "Jesus, there are people pressing on you from every side. What are you talking about?" And I just know that she was saying, "Yes, yes, yes." But Jesus won't let it go. And she finally realized he's just going to stand there and wait. And you know what's funny is, you know, Jesus had all the answer already, right? He knew what had happened. Then the woman, seeing that she could not go unnoticed, came trembling at his feet. And this word here is from a Greek word, tremo, like that. And it means dread. She's thinking, nothing good can come of this. She's trembling. She fell at his feet in the presence of all people. She told why she had touched him and how she had been instantly healed. And then he said to her, "Daughter, your faith has healed you. Go in peace." You know, I mean, I guess she's used to the Pharisees. She's expecting him to say, "Did you think what you were doing? Do you know how many people you've risked today? You know how many people you made?" She's expecting this huge lecture. She's expecting to be the scorn of everybody. She was already outcast enough, and now it's about to turn worse. And I think Jesus, I just think he wanted to be able to, for her to tell her story with her head high for the rest of her life, right? Beautiful story. He says, "In front of all these witnesses, I want you to know that your faith did something. And I want you to go in peace. I got no complaints. You got great faith." And 2,000 years later, people are going to be reading this story about your great faith and how you didn't think that God thought you weren't worth it. You know, you think about the children, and Jesus said, "Why are you keeping them from me?" And we think about so many things, and our great temptation is to think that God thinks I'm not worth it. And Jesus says, "For all eternity, I want you to know this woman's story, because she's worth it. And I don't want you to tremble with fear or dread to come before God." Okay, now I want to go back to Luke 5. I skipped that story earlier. This is my favorite healing. But the other fear story, this one means a lot to me. This is, again, these are these fishermen. And you remember that Andrew was a disciple of John. He found his brother Peter, and he said, "I think we've found the guy," okay? And so they've been checking Jesus out for a while, and Jesus has just finished speaking, all right? And the people are always amazed at what Jesus says and how on target he is and how sacrificial he is. And so he's given this long sermon, and when he's done, he tells them to go out and catch fish because they tried all night and they didn't catch anything. This story also is only in Luke. And Peter said, "We didn't catch anything, but because you say so, I'll throw out this net. You know, you're a pretty good preacher, but you're not a fisherman," right? And the nets are so full that the boats start to sink. And verse 8, "When Simon Peter saw this, he fell at Jesus' knees and said, 'Go away from me, Lord, for I'm a sinful man.' For he and all his companions were astonished at the catch of fish they had taken, and so were James and John, the sons of Zebedee, Simon's partner." You picture, what is Peter thinking? He's been around Jesus all this time, and he's like those folks at the Gerasenes, right? "Would you please get away?" I'm reminded, this was Isaiah. "Woe to me, I cried, I am ruined. For I'm a man of unclean lips. I live among a people of unclean lips, and my eyes have seen the King, the Lord Almighty." I think that's what Peter's thinking. Woe is me. Curse my brother Andrew. It's saying Jesus said to Simon, don't be afraid. From now on, you will fish for people. Again, it's this beautiful story of, I know you think you are a complete screw-up, right? You haven't gotten it right. You've done things wrong. It's like that woman, you even planned to do something wrong. But don't be afraid. So Jesus answers his fear, and I like what he says there, is I've got a place for you. Right? It's not just that, okay, I'm not going to strike you dead. You bother me a little, but I'm not going to strike you dead. But instead he says, I've got just the place for you. I've got something in mind for you. And that's really the story of each one of these, isn't it? The angel comes and says, Zechariah, I got something in mind for you. Mary, I got something in mind for you, right? Don't be afraid. This next story, Luke has it, but I pulled it from Matthew because in this case, I liked it a little better. But this is the one, this is the transfiguration. And so Jesus is transfigured and he's super bright, and Moses and Elijah show up. And these are, you know, we've been studying Daniel, and he's about as impressive as they come, but he's not on the par with this Moses and Elijah. And those two people show up. And Peter starts mumbling these things about building tents and stuff. And said, while he was still speaking, a bright cloud covered them, and a voice from the cloud says, this is my son whom I love. With him I am well pleased. Listen to him. And when the disciples heard this, they fell face down to the ground, terrified. But Jesus came and touched them. Get up, he said. My favorite sentence from Jesus. Don't be afraid. When they looked up, they saw no one except Jesus. And so I asked myself, as terrifying as that scene was, why did God want these apostles to see it, right? Hadn't they been crossing their T's and dotting their I's all this time, right? You know, as Peter would say, we've given up everything to follow you, right? But somehow God wanted them to hear this. And, you know, I'm really pleased with my son, and I want you to listen to him. I remember Bob talking about the hear-do. You remember the hear-do? Did you hear me? Because if you heard me, you did it, right? That's what dads say to their kids, moms and dads say to them. Did you hear what I said? Expect it. And this is God saying, listen, but he doesn't just mean store it away so you can write a story sometime, right? He's saying, I want you to listen and do what he says. And so God is just driving home the point again, even though this Jesus is terrifying, even though my voice is terrifying, so terrifying that in the Old Testament, people said, we don't want to hear from you again, right? Like the people of the Gerasenes. That's a little too good. But God said, even though this is terrifying, I've got to do this one more thing. All right, then this next one, Jesus starts being a little more practical, I think, with this. And he leads into this story. This is these next several times of don't be afraid are in Luke 12. And he's leading into it with the Pharisees. And it's a section of woes to the Pharisees. And it's one after another. And he's telling the folks, the Pharisees look good on the outside, but they are corrupt and no good on the inside, and they don't understand it, and don't be like them. And he moves into this section here. He says, the very next verse, meanwhile, when a crowd of many thousands had gathered so that they were trampling on one another, Jesus began to speak first to his disciples, saying, be on your guard against the yeast of the Pharisees, which is hypocrisy. There's nothing concealed that will not be disclosed or hidden that will not be made known. What you have said in the dark will be heard in the daylight, and what you have whispered in the ear in the inner rooms will be proclaimed from the roofs. Saying the Pharisees think that they're keeping things secret. They're thinking that they get away with it. They're thinking that God doesn't hear those things. And he says that way of thinking is like yeast. And if you're not careful, it'll spread to you. I was thinking some about this past election series, and those things were happening on both sides, right? There was someone released a bunch of secret emails, right? And it showed some kind of a collusion between one campaign and the between Hillary's campaign and the Democratic one, and people were concerned. Are they working together to choose her unfairly? And on the other side, you had Donald Trump, and there was that video that got released of him talking about women, right? And these are all things that you think, well, we can just do this in secret, and then they came out. And people on every side were angry about those things. One of the books that I'm reading for, and several of us have been reading for, the recommended reading out of Mission Alive is one called Contagious Disciple Making. And they make a point that I highlight in there. He says, until I change and become someone who loves God with all my heart, all my soul, and all my strength, why would I expect God to use me? Wow. Right? Jesus says, be careful of these hypocrites. And he goes on, I tell you, my friends, and I love that word, do not be afraid of those who kill the body and after that can do no more. Isn't that crazy? That's got to be the most nuts statement the first time you read it that you ever hear. Right? Don't be afraid of those who kill the body and after that can't do any more to you. Okay, then. Jesus says, but I will show you whom you should fear. Fear him who, after your body has been killed, has authority to throw you into hell. Yes, I tell you, fear him. And he's talking about his father, right? Don't be afraid of these hypocrites out here. There's only one that you need to give that kind of respect to. I tell you, whoever publicly acknowledges me before others, the Son of Man will also acknowledge before him before the angels of God. But whoever disowns me before others will be disowned before the angels of God. As I mean, don't fear the one who can only kill you. Don't disown me because you fear the one who can only kill you. Acknowledge me. When you're brought before the synagogues, rulers and authorities, do not worry about how you will defend yourselves or what you will say, for the Holy Spirit will teach you at that time what you should say. I think Jesus is just saying, do you trust me? It's what he's been saying all along. Do you trust me? He goes through a period in this same chapter 12 where he starts talking about, he talks about a fellow that built bigger barns so you'd hold all his stuff. And Jesus says, where are you trying to hoard your stuff? And he starts talking about, why are you worrying about tomorrow? What do you worry about what you're going to eat? What do you worry about what you're going to wear? And again, do not be afraid. Don't be afraid, little flock, for your Father's been pleased to give you the kingdom. Sell your possessions, give to the poor, provide purses for yourselves that will not wear out, a treasure in heaven that will never fail, where no thief comes near and no moth destroys. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. And so Jesus is saying, I'm telling you these crazy things. I'm telling you not to worry about tomorrow. And I want you to not be afraid to do that. It's kind of the, do you trust me? It's that there's a storm brewing around. Do you trust me to calm the storm? Do you trust me enough to do what I've asked you to do? You know, it's kind of interesting the way Jesus says this. It's not like investing in mutual funds where you try to spread out all of your risks, right? And if one of those mutual funds goes bad, then you're still okay because maybe the others hold it up. And sometimes we try to do this. I would like a little bit of Jesus, right? For a long term, but I really kind of need to keep my hand in this other thing, this worrying about tomorrow part, right? Because if I don't worry about tomorrow, who's gonna? It's also not like real estate, right? Where if all of my neighbors will improve their house, the value of my home goes up, and I don't have to do anything. You know, Jesus is saying, I want you to be all in. This last one, Jesus is headed to Jerusalem. I think it speaks to us too. He's on his way there to raise Lazarus from the dead so that he can die. And they're on their way to Jericho. Blind Bartimaeus calls out. He heals him. Zacchaeus is up in the tree. He calls him down. He eats with him. He praises that. And then he tells this parable, this last parable before he hits Jerusalem. And he says, a man of noble birth went to a distant country to have himself appointed king and then to return. So he called 10 of his servants and he gave them 10 minas. Put this money to work, he said, until I come back. And so Jesus is painting this picture. I'm going to Jerusalem. I'm going to die. But I'm going to come back. And while I'm gone, I'm going to leave some things with you guys. And if you remember the story, you remember one guy comes back and he says, your mina has earned 10 more. And he says, good and faithful servant, take 10 cities. The guy says, it's earned 5 more. Good and faithful servant, you know, 5 cities. And then this one comes along. Another first servant came and said, sir, here's your mina. I have kept it laid away in a piece of cloth. I was afraid of you because you are a hard man. You take out what you did not put in and reap what you did not sow. This guy was afraid of doing what the king asked him to do. Right? I was afraid of you. I was afraid that if I did something, I might lose it, and then you would be really mad, right? And Jesus again is saying, why are you afraid to do what I've asked you to do? Do you not know who I am? I'm with you. I'm not trying to make you fail. I'm trying to use what you can do. And it's interesting, I'm pointing in the wrong direction for you, but this guy's view of the king is that I'm going to do all this work and you're going to get the credit. Right? The last sentence, you take out what you did not put in and you reap what you did not sow. I'm going to do all this work and you're going to get it. It's actually what he's saying, right? But isn't Jesus saying that that's kind of sometimes how we are? We're thinking, I need to worry about tomorrow because I can't spend all my time doing your stuff. I do your stuff. Well, that's fine and good, but who's going to do my stuff? And Jesus says, don't be afraid to trust me. This last one in Luke, you'll recognize this. The thieves on the cross. The other criminal, one of the criminals, you know, is calling out curses on Jesus, and it says the other one rebuked him and said, don't you fear God, since you are under the same sentence. Paul, when he's writing to the Romans, he cites the Old Testament, and he's talking about wicked people, and he says this one sentence, it's very convicting. He says, there is no fear of God before their eyes. And that's what the thief says to the other one. What is the matter with you? You're going to be dead in a few hours. Don't you fear God? And so I guess that's where it comes to me. That sometimes to me, I think these stories in the Bible become so familiar to me that I'm not overwhelmed with fear the way they were. It's like old hat. Oh, yeah, I know this. Jesus saves the day. But does it change me to do what they had to change to do? Does it make me trust him with my everything? I was looking at the Pharisees, and it's so interesting that when you look at what the Pharisees were afraid of, it always says they were afraid of the people. They just didn't get it. Everything they did, they were afraid of the people. But they weren't afraid of Jesus. Makes no sense. And so it seems like to me this Advent season, we look at this wonderful and yet terrible thing that happened. A Savior was born. And he came and he said, I don't care what you've done. It's going to be a fresh slate. It's going to be start over. And I'm going to walk with you. And my spirit is going to be in you. And we're going to teach you. And you just got to trust me, because it's like going to physical therapy, right? You've got to learn how to do all of this again, because what you were doing wasn't getting you anywhere. And so the thought to me of this Advent, of this time of Jesus coming, is this thing of what are you afraid of, and not being afraid to trust in Jesus.